All right. I've got tape rolling here. Maybe I can just have you say your name and what you're up to.
Sure. Joseph Miller, running for U.S. Senate. I'm running for U.S. Senate as the Libertarian nominee. That's right.
All right. You know, I guess the very first question popped in my mind, and actually several other people suggested I ask it when I told them you were coming to town, is why didn't you run in the Republican primary again this year since you had so much success 6 years ago?
Well, you know, Mayor Dan Sullivan called me. This was close to the deadline for declaring, said he was getting into the race. And obviously with two significant challengers against an incumbent, that's not going to work very well. And, of course, he quietly withdrew a couple of weeks after the deadline passed, which I've called him about. I haven't heard a response. It disturbed us that she didn't get a real challenge. It was interesting when you looked at the primary result, though. She was challenged by three different Republicans, each of whom had pretty much no name recognition across the state. Normally, when you have a person running for office that doesn't have name recognition, they get about 2 or 3% of the vote. These three collectively got 30% of the vote, which is pretty extraordinary given the fact that Lisa Murkowski spent $4 million in the primary. And then, of course, the turnout itself of 17%, the lowest since the Mike Gravel days in the 1970s. It reflected to us that she wasn't all that popular, even though she did win, obviously, the primary. And so when the Libertarian Party asked me whether or not I'd be willing to step in when their nominee stepped out, it made sense. My wife gave it a green light. You just met her a few minutes ago. And, of course, that was the primary right there for me that I had to get her permission first because she takes the brunt of these things. But, yeah, that was just a few weeks ago, what, 6, 7 weeks ago. And we hit the ground running. I'll tell you, it's just been an exciting run since.
Mm-hmm. You weren't able to make it to the fisheries debate here in Kodiak a few weeks ago, but let me ask you about fish.
Sure.
Federal fisheries issues, observers on boats, bycatch, a lot of these are federal issues. What's your familiarity with them and what's your platform on them?
My commitment to Alaska is that I want to protect the resource that Alaskans depend upon, and I absolutely understand that there's a federal role. Any time that you've got the commons that's being shared by other states, other foreign entities, there clearly has got to be a federal hand. And that's something we've got to support because the fisheries are a main component of our economic viability in the state. Debate itself, I was in the Southeast at the time. This is a very short campaign for us, just a matter of weeks. Many of these campaigns challenging incumbents are years long. This is much shorter. So in order to touch the whole of the state, we had to squeeze a lot in just a very short amount of time. But Kodiak is near and dear to my wife and I. My wife's been down here a number of times. You talked, as I mentioned with her earlier, I also love to hunt and fish down here. I'm not to offend those that don't like to hunt, but I shot a nice Kodiak bear a few years back, and my boys have hunted elk out here a number of times. Love a fog neck. I mean, just it's a beautiful, extraordinary area. And Andrew's here, not to pitch them necessarily, but they have always just done an extraordinary job for us, and we enjoy getting down here. Have a lot of friends here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Back to fisheries issues, though. Nice segue. The unregulated illegal fishing that's always an issue for Alaska fisheries, bycatch of king salmon is harming state fisheries. You know, the federal bycatch in federal fisheries is harming state fisheries.
Right.
It's really an issue.
Yeah.
Is something that you've thought about?
You know, one of the things that we've committed to, because we understand that that is an issue, is making sure that we have the right people that are part of the team to ensure that those issues are protected. We've got those issues all over the state, with the state users being impacted by what's happening out on the high seas. Of course, predatory fishing is another issue. Again, my commitment to Alaskans is we're going to ensure that we have the top minds that are working on our team to ensure that our interests are protected. And my commitment is to make Alaska better for all of us. And not just in the fisheries either. I mean, that's a main component of our race is, our interest is trying to put the special interests out of the picture so that the people of Alaska succeed. One of the problems we've had in this state over a period of now, we're almost into our 36th year of the Murkowski dynasty, is that we've focused on basically getting the easy money and not those solutions that can actually create sustainable jobs in the state. Fisheries, obviously, a renewable resource, but there are other things also, of course, in the state that are critically important that we focus on opening so that we can use those resources to create jobs. It's the hydrocarbons, coal industry, timber. And it takes a very diverse approach from my perspective in order to get Alaska back on track. One of the things I'm hearing throughout the state is the fact that people have been really hurt by the PFD cut of 50%. And I think that's kind of emblematic of what leaders in the state tend to do. They look at the people as being basically the group to cut or the people to take the pain rather than the special interests. And I think that's one of the main reasons why there was a decision made rather than hitting the bureaucracy to hit instead the people at a 50% cut. And that should not be the way it is. And that's one of the reasons why I think that the focus has been historically for now over three decades on trying to grab more and more of that ever diminishing federal share of the money or state share of the federal money. When, of course, what we're going to have to do to create some sort of sustainable future is to focus on the resource base. I heard when I first got here, Jay, I heard about how ANWR was going to be open and how MPRA was going to be open. And now we're sitting at a pipeline that is a third full, in part because those things never happened. And they never happened because real political leverage was not applied to open up those things. I think it's very likely that Trump is going to be elected president. I know that sounds maybe counterintuitive to some, but the reality is I think that the voters that come to vote are those that are going to want change, and I think that that is going to reflect a different result than what the polls reflect. With Trump as president, with his focus on resources, assuming that the people of the state of Alaska decide to elect me, I think that will be a tremendous partnership to help all industries in Alaska, whether it be fisheries, timber, coal, hydrocarbons, to create an economic renaissance and pull us out of the recession. We're now in a third quarter of a shrinking economy in the state, and it's got to be reversed.
Speaking of going to Washington, if you're elected, and what scenario would you like to see the rest of the Senate as? Republican, do you hope to get a committee assignment from the Republicans? Or
I've committed publicly to caucusing with the Republican Party. I think that there is a real – I think both parties are corrupt. I mean, I'm running as a libertarian, and it's worked out perfectly because I've been railing – I've been criticizing both parties since I ran back in 2010. If you look at what both parties do, it's essentially the same. You know, they've got differences on social issues, but effectively the same thing happens each and every year. That's an expansion of the federal government, increased debt. We're now at $20 trillion since Murkowski was appointed by her dad. We've increased that debt by $13 trillion. Increased interest, it reduces the amount of federal funds that can come into the state. Those are all impacts that are created by both parties, whether Democrat or Republican. Debt continues, expansion of government continues. But I do believe that the Republican Party is more resource-friendly, resource development-friendly than the Democratic Party is. I mean, look at Hillary Clinton, for example. Hillary Clinton said just last year, ANWR was off limits. She thinks it's a special place. It shouldn't be developed. I don't even know if she's ever been up to the North Slope to see how we do oil extraction in the state. But obviously, it can be done safely. It can be done in an environmentally sound way. And the beauty of ANWR is it's co-located with the Trans-Alaskan Pipeline. We could refill it. You know, 90% of our state budget, as public radio well knows, is a consequence of oil revenues. We should be able to fill that pipeline and take care of the budget deficit, but we've got to have people that are willing to use the resource that God has given us in an environmentally sound way. She doesn't want that. The other Democrats don't want that. And it's not just on that. I mean, her husband killed timber in the Southeast. Bill Clinton did during his administration. In addition to that, of course, they want to kill coal. And there are some people in the Republican Party the same way. Don't get me wrong, but I think that party is going to lead us down a road toward wealth and prosperity in the state, along with the Trump presidency, quicker than the other side. If, in fact, it's a split, and this is kind of one of the things that the pundits have been talking about now for several months, that you know, the projections are that it could be close to a split between the Democrats and the Republicans. My position as a libertarian senator from the state of Alaska could bring extraordinary leverage. It may be that I can actually select the next majority leader, which for the state of Alaska would be an awesome opportunity. Because we could get rid of corrupt McConnell, which I do think he's corrupt. I guess I shouldn't say I know him, but I've talked to him a number of times. He's not a guy that's after what's good for the people. He's after the crony capitalist, which is what really keeps people like Murkowski in power. I think we need to replace him with somebody like Senator Mike Lee, who's very resource development oriented. He is a senator from a state that is largely federally owned. He understands the need to displace the feds so the states can create their own secure, independent economic future. And if it's split and I can make that call, I'm certainly going to pick somebody that's going to be best for the state of Alaska.
I'm unfamiliar with Mike Lee. Where is he from?
He's from Utah.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Boy, a lot of land right senators come out of Utah, that's for sure.
Right. And it's not just Utah. I mean, there's a doctrine called the equal footing doctrine that a lot of Western elected leaders are upset over the fact that their states came into the union without the same equal footing as the states that originally came in. I mean, you look at the eastern states, they got all their land. And most of the states in the West, they got less than a majority of it. And, of course, Alaska completely dominated by the feds. And now it's even worse. This year alone, and a lot of people aren't aware of this because it really hasn't impacted us yet, but this year – 100 million acres of Alaska land was taken over by the federal government for fish and wildlife management. 100 million acres. And I, you know, when we have elected leaders in D.C. that say they're fighting for us and they're allowing these agencies to take over our lands for fish and wildlife management, it's atrocious. And one of the reasons why, and a lot of the people in the bush will tell you why, and that is that, you know, fish and wildlife at the federal level is not managed according to Alaskan values. It's not for game abundance. A lot of times predators aren't even managed. And so we need to come up with a solution that can displace the federal government. It's one of the reasons why I've advocated for tribal sovereignty. I think there's an opportunity for cooperation between the state and the tribes to displace federal management so that we can take back the state for the people.
Independence from federal oversight seems to be the core of your beliefs. What else can you apply that to that would affect the people of Kodiak?
Well, I think that any time that you bring self-rule closer to home, you have less corruption and you have more responsive needs to the people. So, you know, when we're talking about, for example, what you as a people want to do with your own resources, with social policy, those are the type of things that ought to be done closer to home rather than people, you know, basically dictating to Alaskans what they should do. Education is a great example of this. I've been a strong advocate for getting the federal government out of education. Does that mean I want to gut the money to the state? Of course not. And it's a position that's been mischaracterized in mine in the past. The reality is if the state of Alaska received the federal money from the federal government for education that the federal government gives but attaches all these strings to it, if we actually had that money available to us to use as we saw fit, especially at the local level, we could create a complete renaissance in our schools and our educational system to best fit those things that we need rather than having the federal bureaucrats saying, hey, you know, it's time today to have a little boy use a little girl's restroom. I mean, and I just bring that out as just one of many examples. There are many different examples of whether it be no child, you know, some of these dictates that they have out there that require certain testing standards that don't fit Alaska or other requirements. But any time that you have somebody at a distant place like Washington, D.C., that tends to accrue power. I mean, that's why they're there. You know, government continues to expand. It doesn't hardly ever contract. Those are the type of things that don't apply then laws, rules, and regulations that help the people. The people should choose for themselves. And so I'm going to be a strong advocate for that, of course, with an absolute focus on ways to create wealth for the state. Wealth comes from the ground. It comes from our resources. Handling those responsibly so that we can create jobs, and not just for the current generation, but our kids and our grandkids.
Joe, this has been a great, enlightening interview. I know so much more about the background of your positions now, and it's terrific.
Thank you, Jay. I appreciate that.
To hear from you in person.
Well, I enjoy being here in Kodiak. Sorry I just finally got here, but the election just started for us a few weeks ago, and we're trying to hit every area of the state. But Kodiak has always had a special place in my heart.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Jay.